From Tally to Cali,
it's time to wake up.
Warchant.com is your ultimate Seminole sports source.
And this is Wake Up Warchant, presented by Corner Pocket Bar and Grill. One ball, Corner
Pocket. Now here's Warchant.com's Azan Hajivandi
and Corey Clark.
Wake up! It's Wake Up Warchant, presented by Corner Pocket Bar and Grill. Coming up on today's show, an all-time great, now a Hall of Famer, LaMarcus Joyner joins us to discuss the honor and his love for Florida State. Jim Nagy of the Senior Bowl discusses the trio of Noles that went from Mobile to the league and Mike Norvell's reputation now as a developer in NFL circles. Wake Up Warchant, presented by Corner Pocket Bar and Grill, Tallahassee, Florida, and our great friends over at Vitamin Energy. This show and the other two shows this week presented with limited commercial interruption because I'm on vacation. These have been taped a little bit in advance. I don't want to say well in advance, but taped a little bit in advance. So if you got appreciation for some of your guys over here working on their vacation, on their time off, go to the Corner Pocket Bar and Grill. Maybe get your lunch special, half-pound Black Angus burger for $8.99. Or check out vitaminenergy.com. Use the promo code WARCHAMPBOGO. Summer's almost here. The kids are going to be home all the time. Step up your game so you can hang with them. And then join warchant.com. All the latest, obviously, is going to be at warchant.com. I think this week is actually ACC Media Days. Spring meetings or something like that? I don't know. It's going down in Amelia Island. Ira's going to probably be there, I would assume. Sorry, Ira. I kind of realized it was going to be falling on the dates that I was going to be out of town. But, if it's not that, it's always something. So just had to pull the ripcord and leave. So, again, these recorded beforehand, but we've got three shows worth of interviews. On Wednesday, we'll do a James Tibbs, the third interview, like a good 25 minutes with he, Corey, and I. This was before the weekend series against Pitt, so I don't even know what happened because this is all recorded before I left on vacation. Love you guys, everybody. Hit the thumbs up, 5-star rating and review. With that said, we did get LaMarcus Joyner, 9-year NFL veteran, Florida State Hall of Famer now, All-American, as well as a national champion. Corey and I had fun on this one. Here's LaMarcus Joyner talking about life in Tallahassee, life as a Hall of Famer, and everything else in between. Listen, I don't care what the program says, everybody. He was 6'5", 235 pounds, ran like the wind and hit like a Mack truck. One of the greatest defensive backs from a university that's developed a whole lot of great defensive backs and now part of the incoming 2024 Florida State University Hall of Fame athletics class. LaMarcus Joyner joining us on the program. LaMarcus, how are you, man?
I'm doing well, especially after receiving that news. It's just life-changing. It's amazing.
Where were you when you got the phone call? Who told you?
I was actually home, and Coach Mike Norvell gave me a call, in the middle of dinner.
Okay.
And I was like, this got to be important. And I picked up the phone, and when he told me, literally my legs got weak. Like, it was unbelievable. I never forget that phone call.
What were your goals when you got to Florida State? I don't know that you thought when you were at St. Thomas in 2008 or 9, like, man, one day I'm going to be a Florida State Hall of Famer. But what were you? Were your goals to leave a legacy like that? I assume they were because you're you.
It was definitely to leave a legacy. I know upon arrival, my whole mindset and my goal was to change the culture because I felt like the Florida State that I knew, the Florida State that I grew up a fan of, had kind of diminished. And it was kind of hard to watch. And the passion I had and the desire I had at that point in my life for football and having the impact on the football field and for my teammate was to go to Florida State and turn things back around and reinvent the identity that Florida State was known for.
I know you finished stuff up at St. Thomas Aquinas, but you're from Dade County, obviously, LaMarcus. You talked about the passion to turn this thing around, but when this hillbilly coach from West Virginia, Jimbo Fisher, is trying to take over and be the head coach and asks you to believe in him, to trust in him at a program that, as you said, really wasn't easy to watch for a long time. What made you confident and willing to want to accept that challenge and come to Tallahassee?
You know, me and Coach Fisher had established a really good relationship over the 2 years that he recruited me when he was on that staff. And to be honest, you know, I fell in love with Coach Fisher, and I'm happy that he was a part of that journey. But I mean, a guy from a Tallahassee street corner could have came and recruited me. I was going to Florida State regardless. Like, Florida State was my goal, my dream, and it didn't matter who was in charge. I was going to be a Seminole.
So, LaMarcus, the thing about you that I'll always remember, other than you obviously being great, was that you have juice in your body, energy in your body to inflict damage to somebody bigger than you that isn't normal. It's just not. You hit people harder. You run a little bit faster. You run through them, and you inflict damage where they always went backwards. Was that something you were doing on those playgrounds as a seven-year-old? Like, was that something you felt you had even at a really young age? Like, wow, I really hit that kid hard. He's crying. Like, what do I have in my body that allows me to do this?
I remember as a kid playing sandlot football, and I had to play with my older brother. Like, that was almost punishment.
Oh, okay.
Like, if I gave my mom a hard time, I would have to go play football with the big boys. And it became a norm. It got rid of a lot of fear and instilled a lot of belief, to the point that when I got older and got into, you know, organized football, size didn't mean anything to me. I didn't know what size was. I just knew that he was flesh and bones like me, and I was going to hit anything that moved.
Do you think you've been around football your whole life now, and you've played with a lot of great players, and you've played with hundreds upon hundreds of different players. Are people just born with that, do you think? What you have, is that something that you worked at, or was that something that you just thanked the heaven above that was in you?
I thank the heaven above that it was in me. It's a lot of things that I have to be honest with guys that, you know, who ask me in life, you know, I'm an undersized guy and you were, and how can I do this? And I just thank God. I just tell him, man, it was just a gift that God gave me and a passion that he instilled in me. And that's something you can't teach. You gotta be born with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Marcus, at this time, going into the 2013 season, like in May of 2013, did you know what was on the horizon for you and your teammates that season?
100%. Like, no one could have told me anything different. I honestly felt like it should have happened years before. That was just always the goal and always the belief in me. And I came to practice and I came in the locker room every single year with that kind of energy. And every year we progressed, got better, got better, got better. And I thought that it should have happened 2012, but it eventually happened in 2013. But, you know, God timing is always the right timing.
I wanted to ask you about three particular players on that team. The first one, you had played with Kelvin Benjamin in 2012, maybe 11. I think he got there in 11, actually. But did you see going into his, let's say, July or August, okay, Kelvin is in a different kind of shape, and he is going to be a really tough guy to cover for these guys. Like, he's elevated himself now to where he could be an NFL first-round pick. Did you see that? In August, did you see his body transformation and just like, oh, my Lord, this guy's going to be a bear to cover?
100%. I mean, early on in his young career at Florida State, you know, one of the issues for him was work ethic.
Yeah.
And, you know, to get in shape. So he has an amazing story with how he was able to take coaching and, like, you know, the leaders that he had around him to see guys like come to work every day. And it influenced and encouraged him. And in one summer, we will be out there, no coaches, no anything. You know, it was against the rules. And we'll be doing 7-on-7. You know, he'll run around the field. He'll work out on his own. I was like, man, like, that's a different Kelvin Benjamin, like, other than what I'm used to seeing. And you've seen it, like, when we would do 1-on-1s and 7-on-7s. And I was like, man, like, he's going to really help this team out a lot. And he was a first-round draft pick. It was amazing to see him have that turnaround in his career.
And then another guy I wanted to ask you about who might be on the fast track to the Hall of Fame. He'll definitely be an FSU Hall of Famer. You know, you guys had a loaded secondary anyway. You had you, Terrence Brooks, Tyler Hunter was coming back. You had a lot of dudes. Nick Wasem. You had some guys that have played and played a lot. And then this kid from Tennessee, a true freshman, comes in. Mm-hmm. And that I don't think he early enrolled. I think he just came in August or the summer. What did you think of Jalen Ramsey immediately? It could you because game recognizes game. Aslan, we're saying right. that to each other all the time. Game recognizes game. Could you tell early on, oh, man, this guy's different. He might be able to play with us. Because, you know, those freshmen, when you're a badass senior, you got to earn your spot, man. We're not going to just, oh, you're a five-star, whoop-de-doo. I assume that's your mindset, but you see him immediately and think what?
The simple fact that they made room for him on the depth chart as a starter be on the field during that time, it speaks volumes. But I remember seeing him in summer camp because, you know, it's Florida State. You see a bunch of four-star, five-star guys coming in. That's what rivals say.
Right.
You know, rubbing elbows, a friend here and there say he's a five-star, but you don't see it. When Jalen came, man, and I seen him pressing guys and putting guys on the sideline, I was like, man, that's – I never saw a freshman come in college ready as I did Jalen. Like, even myself, you seen guys have to be developed. You know, everybody was All-American coming out of high school. But Jalen was college ready his freshman year.
Yeah.
And like, the path that he's carved for himself is no surprise to me. It's no surprise at all.
Do you recognize some of the traits that you have with him? Like, he's kind of an asshole on the field. He runs through people. He is physical, and he thinks he's the best player on the field. Did you recognize that right away, too, in him, that y'all were kind of kindred spirits in that way?
100%. 100%. Jalen is the total package. I mean, he has the attitude, the physique, the heart, the spirit. He's the total package. And that's why he will be rewarded greatly, because he actually put in the work with the ability that the heavens has given him.
Right.
Pasadena obviously was the highlight of that 2013 season for you guys, LaMarcus. But let's go to October, I think, in South Carolina. The blitz call, like, did you know it was coming on that sequence? How much did you work on it that week in practice? How much supreme confidence did you have that you were going to get home and put Tosh Boyd on his back?
I mean, the only thing I'm wondering is why Coach Jeremy Pruitt didn't call it so often during the season.
Like, you would have led the country in sacks.
Tell me about it. I'm like, why wait to Clemson?
Yeah.
But we worked that blitz so much, and man, Tevin Smith would ask him for it every week. And we finally got it, and it worked. And I think we ran it probably quite often after that game. Yeah. I mean, teams picked up on it, but we came out the gates with it that game.
Did you ever come close to, in that moment, stripping Mario and taking the ball yourself? Because he was lumbering. You would have scored 2 seconds before he did.
See, that right there is an expression of my character. And how much I cared about my teammate as
you
well
let him
getting the glory. Because I could have easily picked the ball up. I laugh at myself all the time when I watch that highlight. And I was like, kind of like, go ahead, get the ball, man. Like, we all going to eat. That was my mentality. If everyone around me eat, I eat. You know, that was my mentality.
Was that night, was that the most fun or top three most fun you've ever had playing football that night in Death Valley and Clemson?
For sure. For sure. Absolutely. It will be that night, my high school game against South Carolina Burns, another South Carolina team.
Right, sure.
And the Super Bowl. I mean, we didn't win the Super Bowl, but that was just like the three highlights of my career of playing football.
How much different was that week? I mean, you got a whole lot of time, obviously, getting ready for the national championship game versus the Super Bowl. But, you know, everyone thinks a state championship game is the ultimate as a kid. Then you play in a college football CS national championship, then you play in the Super Bowl. Just there's levels to this. I mean, how crazy of a level move up was it from playing Auburn to playing Tom Brady?
I mean, that's something I can't even explain. But I will say this. I remember just running out of this, and that wasn't the first time playing Tom Brady in my career. It was like the second time. So, you know, it was great to play him again, but I remember running out of the tunnel and like, wow, man, I'm just a kid from a small project, Victory Homes, and I get to run out of the tunnel on the highest level there is in the game they call football that only a scant few of people get to do. So that night was just, it was surreal. Like, it felt like a video game. It was crazy. But I thank God I was able to experience that.
I mean, you experienced almost everything you could in football. Like you said, you played on a great high school team. You played on one of the great college teams of all time, and then you played in the Super Bowl. I assume as we look here, I don't know, you're in your 30s. I don't know how old you are, but you're in your 30s. Do you feel fulfilled by what that sport gave you? Because you gave so much to it. Do you feel fulfilled about what it gave back to you?
100%. And I think that's what made me decide to walk away from the game when I did. I don't think football is a game that you can play for money or for anything other than the passion for it. Because if you try to, it won't work. And I felt like when I fulfilled so many accomplishments, I didn't have that passion anymore. And it was nothing to play for anymore. So that's what made me walk away from my NFL career.
Was it hard though?
Not when you gave it all you got.
Yeah.
I gave football every sweat, blood, and tear that I had. I never took shortcuts. I always loved the game. And I felt like if I played it for any other reason, then that would be disrespecting the game. Right. And yeah.
How often do you text PJ and just remind him that, you know, you saved, you know, you saved him a lot of grief and you kept the national championship alive for Florida State back in the last
I actually haven't spoken to PJ in a couple of years, man. We move on. We text early on. We have families. We go different directions. So, I mean, they always going to be my brothers in spirit. But, you know, I haven't talked to him in a while.
And that reminded me of the third person I meant to ask you about. And obviously he was the guy that was still, you had a great team in 12. The difference, in my opinion, was the quarterback, even though EJ was awesome. When did you know with Jameis? Like, number one, I know he got you in the spring game on the first play, but you knew before that. But, like, not just the physical ability, but he was built, like you, mindset-wise, he was built a little different. When did you suss that out and realize he was a different kind of guy?
If you ask Jameis this, and I wish you would have asked him first, because he'll be able to tell you this story, like the back of his hand. We were in practice, and I believe, don't quote me on this, I believe EJ wasn't feeling well, and it gave Jameis a chance to get snaps with the first team. And not only that, when he was on practice squad, like, he would tear the first string defense up. Like, he would eat us apart with practice squad guys. And no offense to EJ, like you say, he was a great quarterback for us. He did a lot of great things at Florida State. First round draft pick, great legacy himself. I went to Jameis 2012 after practice, and I said to him, I said, when it's your turn, you're going to be the reason. I literally told him that. That was midway through the season 2012. Just the things that he did and practice and his leadership ability, natural leadership ability. Not because Coach Fisher said he was the leader or the media portrayed him as a leader. He was just a natural leader. And he was almost like a guy like Jalen, like, when you know, you know. And I told him he was going to be the reason. And it happened the very next year.
You know, a lot of people are jaded now when it comes to college football, LaMarcus. It's hard to keep up with the transfer portal and the NIL and all the different elements that lead players to where they end up going to college. But, you know, hanging around Kenny Shaw when he has his camps in the summer and the offseason, you see a bunch of guys that were on that 13 team, the 12 team, you know, that class that you were part of, all come back and you all get along. You see the way your face lights up when you talk about Jameis or PJ. Just, you know, Jimbo gets a bad rap in some circles when it comes to Florida State fans. Everybody appreciates that team and what you guys did. How special was that team? Talent-wise, obviously, it was off the charts, but, like, that brotherhood, that's something that Mike Norvell is trying to create here in Tallahassee. Could that ever be duplicated, just how close and how tight and how talented that team was?
It definitely could. I'm not one of those older guys that kicked the ladder, and just because we did it, don't think it can't be done again. I mean, if you look at last year, it was pretty much done again. Yeah. I think that the brotherhood is what carried us over that hump that Florida State was missing. Like, because like I said, if you look at the 2012 team with Xavier Rhodes, yeah, Vince Williams, Nigel Bradham, all those guys.
Bjorn.
Tank. Yeah. Like, you can argue that maybe we had more talent or just the same amount. But you know, when you win championships, everyone's going to get drafted. So everyone's going to say, hey, 2013 had more draft picks. But yeah, that happens. That's, you know, that happens when you win championships. That's, you know, that's part of it. But I would say that brotherhood is what set that 2013 team apart from all the other teams that was on, that I was on. We always had talent.
And LaMarcus, you're now in your mid-30s. I wanted to kind of project future. You talk about how much this sport has given you, and you gave everything you had to the sport. Did you ever think about just your personality? I feel like you could – you got coaching in you. You got the love of the sport in you. Would you ever want to do that, or could you see yourself coaching this sport?
That's a hard question. Everyone asked me that. Everyone kind of like, you know, try to get me around it.
I just didn't know if you ever had any interest at all in it when you were growing up or even in college or in the pros, if you ever thought, man, I could be a DB's coach one day, or I could be the head coach at Florida State one day. I wonder if that ever crossed your mind, if it ever interested you at all. Clearly, it looks like it did not.
No, it didn't. I'm a different kind of thinking guy. I mean, I help guys with personal things off the field. Like, I'm like an introverted person. Like, if you need help, you know, you can call me. My line is like an open line, but to – you know, be a coach, and I just look at it differently. I never thought about it.
Yeah. Also, like you've talked about, like people want to ask you, hey, I'm a 5'8 guy too, or a 5'9 guy too. How do I do what you do? And you want to be like, man, you can't. I'm LaMarcus Joyner. Do you know you're not me. You weren't built like me. You don't have what I have inside of me. So yeah, that might be hard to translate to like 15-year-olds wanting to be the next LaMarcus Joyner.
Yeah, I have to use parables when I answer that.
Well, Marcus, you got to play in Los Angeles, Oakland, New York City. Where
St.
are you?
Louis.
Yeah, as well. I mean, what are you up to these days, and where did you end up settling down and setting roots up at?
I'm in South Florida in Broward County. I mean, I got a basketball team at the house.
Yeah. You know?
So my kids really look up to me. And to be honest with you, my goal here on out is to get them everything I got to make sure they do some great things in life and be a contribution to humanity and life and be great people.
Do they have in you, and this isn't just a sports question, it's a personality question. And I know they're probably not quite old enough to make determinations of what they're going to do, but can you see in some of them or all of them that drive that isn't natural? Because they're going to grow up different than LaMarcus Joyner grew up, clearly. They're not going to have the same upbringing in life that you had before you got to Florida State and made millions of dollars. But can you see inner drive in them? And how do you instill that in kids that grew up different than you did?
100%. I now see why Coach Fisher and I didn't get along. He only liked me on game days.
Right.
It's so much competition in my house, it's annoying. But I'm a competitor.
Right.
But I never thought I would get sick and tired of competition. And you know, their kids, they hear things in school, they see things, they see how I father and parent them. And I think they're gonna be special. I think they're gonna be great. I mean, they come from a good back. They don't come from where I come from, like you say, but obviously. The root starts with me. So, right. You know, my parenting and my coaching around the house, kind of like I see myself in them.
Yeah. You were a competitor in practice. We heard a lot of stories.
It was bad. It was bad.
9-year NFL veteran, All-American, national champion, a Super Bowl finalist, and now a Florida State University Athletics Hall of Famer. LaMarcus, thanks so much for taking time out, man.
Let's go right here. They interrupting the interview. Hey, baby.
give him some FaceTime. LaMarcus, thanks so much for doing this, man. Best of luck and congratulations on a well-deserved honor from a well-lived football life.
Thank you all for having me.
Thank you, LaMarcus. Thank you so much.
Have a great one.
Shout out to LaMarcus again for taking time out, hopping on with us. We certainly appreciated it. He's awesome as a football player and as a human being. I love when he was like, yeah, I'm not all about getting up on top of the building and then kicking the ladder off. Good for him, man. Good for him. I'm petty. LaMarcus is not, though. That's why he's great, and I'm not. All right, next up, we got Jim Nagy from the Senior Bowl out there in Mobile, the Reese's Senior Bowl. Florida State had three dudes that were out there. Jaheim Bell, Johnny Wilson, Braden Fisk, all three now on NFL rosters. So we asked Jim what he saw from those three guys in their time in Mobile, what he thinks about their futures in the NFL, and how bright the future could be in Tallahassee now with Mike Norvell leading the charge and running on all cylinders. Little interview time for everybody here on Wake Up War Chant. We got Jim Nagy, executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl. Hope we're not interrupting vacation for you, Jim. I'm sure it's been a hectic 2024 for you, but thanks for taking time out. Sure appreciate it.
No, thanks for having me on. Yeah, no vacation yet. Later in the summer.
All right, very well. Before we start talking about the Senior Bowl and just how lauded this class was this year, just want to get some bio stuff out there. We got a lot of kids listening to us, Jim. Want to have them chase their hopes and dreams. You, being a Michigan man from the state of Michigan, went to the University of Michigan. Aspirations to be part of a football team in terms of being in a front office. Did it happen for you immediately jumping into the scouting world, or was there a bit of a lag between figuring that out and executing your vision for what you want to do in the future?
Now in hindsight, it probably happened quicker than it could have. I grew up playing football. My dad was a high school coach for a lot of years. And, I just got bit by the scouting thing pretty early, really watching the draft, when I was starting to do some ESPN stuff and got to know Mel Kiper, I told him that. I said, Mel, you had a big reason why I got into this. For whatever reason, like the draft process and like really the team building is what I kind of got enamored with. So, and then I was at Michigan. I had some small school college offers, and this is pre-internet. You couldn't just Google, how to become an NFL scout. No one, so I was kind of on my own. I was kind of, blind leading the blind there. But so I went to Michigan, and then my last couple of years I worked in the athletic department, worked with the football team. And then I just sent out resumes and cover letters. And that's really all I did. And the only non-rejection letter I got back was from the Green Bay Packers to go up there and intern. So I went up there on an intern year, and that staff had six future GMs on that personnel staff. And just like anything in life, whatever profession, you get your foot in the door and you work hard and, develop relationships, and then, one thing leads to another. So that's kind of how I got started.
Scouting, obviously a notoriously grinder of a job path career to select. Is there like a quintessential story that you have, Jim, that just kind of distills down everything about what it is to be a scout, whether it's the long days or having to go through all sorts of crazy hoops to be able to sort of make some connections and network with folks?
Yeah. I mean, it's a great job. You certainly need to love it. It's certainly not glamorous. You're behind the scenes and you're working your tail off. I would say the biggest eye opener when I took this Senior Bowl job, I'd been in the NFL 18 years, and I looked at my Marriott profile, and I'd spent over 9 of those 18 years in Marriott hotels. So, not always conducive to family life. I'm lucky I found the right girl and we've got two kids but that was a big reason why I took the Senior Bowl job, was just because my son was getting to be high school age and playing football and basketball and doing all that stuff. And I wanted to be around more for it. So it's tough sledding. It's a hard life, but if you love it, just like anything, if you love what you do, it doesn't really seem like work, but a lot of sacrifice though.
Did you like the fact that you were the Southeast scout seemingly for most of the franchises that you were working for? Is this the part of the country you want to be in if you're going to be a scout?
I mean, this is a great area to work when you've got, really what proves out to be every year the most players. Just SEC football alone, if you just take the SEC, that's usually over a quarter of the draft just in the Southeastern Conference. So it was a great place, great coaches down here, easy to get around. Not a lot of restrictions at schools. They treat you pretty good down here in this part of the country, and developed a lot of great relationships down here with coaches. So it's a good place. Good weather too. You weren't I've scouted the whole country before, so some parts you got to really be creative with your schedule on when you're going to be, avoiding blizzards and, things of that nature. So I guess the only thing we got down here is hurricanes. You got to be careful during hurricane season. So, but no, it's great down here.
We'll start talking about some of the specific Florida State players, but just this past year for you, Jim, in the Senior Bowl, the Reese's Senior Bowl, I think I saw 110 guys that were in the NFL draft, were in Mobile for the Senior Bowl. I mean, nearly 50 picks in the first three rounds alone. I know this was the first year where underclassmen were allowed to come out to Mobile and perform. But just how big of an event has this become? It was already a great brand, an iconic brand, some might say, when you took over, but it's really seemed to be elevated here the last few years.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you saying that. Yeah, it's been a great game forever. It's always been the best game. I'm lucky that I'm in this chair right now. And, we've done some things, you know, especially social media wise and just structuring a real football operation, which no all-star game had ever really done before. I feel like we've done some things, but it has been a great game forever. This year's success was we had 43% of the draft in our game this year. 10 first round picks. We had 65 in the first four rounds. All the other all-star games combined had 5. So, I'm proud of the staff. There's, everybody that pours into this process, including all our community volunteers here in Mobile. We have over 400 volunteers that, come together during game week and shuttle these players around and take them through registration and, serve as security at practice. I mean, there's just so many people in our community that get around these players and support these guys. And they all play a role too, because all these players leave and they go back, and next year there'll be another group of players, and they'll reach out to those guys and say, what was your experience in Mobile like? So I tell everyone that kind of touches our game that they play a role in our success.
I know when it comes to postseason games, bowl games, and this can count as a bowl game in some regards, it's tough to get players to understand the importance of competing and being able to showcase their skills. I know bowl games, obviously a little bit different than this showcase, but are you hoping, it seemingly seems that by the performance of the players that went to the Senior Bowl in the NFL draft, this really hopefully should further emphasize the importance of getting out there and competing and putting as much film or getting in front of as many scouts and personnel folks as you possibly can in a day and age where a lot of players want to shut things down and play it safe.
Right, right. No, yeah, it's different. And I understand why fans get upset when players opt out of bowl games, because I grew up watching the bowl games with my dad and my family, and I love the bowl game system. But, the one difference with our game in the bowl games is there's a lot of money on the line. If you're not playing for a championship, if you're not in the CFP, is it make sense to play like your 55th game for your alma mater or go to an event like this where you're going to have all these NFL decision makers standing on the field with you, where you can really make some money. It's two different things. I kind of hate it where it's gone with the bowl thing, because again, I love the bowl games, but there's a lot of value in coming here and being in front of these decision makers. Again, not to disparage the scouting community, because that was me, man. Those are my guys. But it's a lot more meaningful, when these GMs and head coaches can see these guys for themselves, rather than not going to draft meetings and just hear it from a guy like me, how great a player was and why a scout liked him. They get to meet these guys here for a week. It's really an extended time where probably no other part of the draft process where these players have this much time in front of these NFL folks. So the buy-in's been great. We've had 4 straight years now with over 100 draft picks, and it just continues to build on itself. So hopefully we'll keep it going next year.
One of those draft picks, Jaheim Bell, who started his career at South Carolina, then came to Florida State. And, we saw him, I think it was North Carolina or Duke, and in the bowl game, he absolutely tore them up. And, we thought Debo Samuel 2.0, and he finds a home there in New England. What sort of a player did you see from Jaheim, and some sort of performance and the things that you heard about him that seemed to stand out at his time in Mobile?
Yeah, he was an easy guy for us to invite. I mean, going back to last summer, watching the South Carolina stuff, really high-end athlete. Now, he's a little bit of a tweener. That's probably why he slipped a little bit. He's not going to be an end of the line of scrimmage tight end. That's just not going to be his deal. He's not big and long enough. So he'd have to go to a team that had a vision for how to use him. And hopefully that's the Patriots. I know, talking to those guys in New England leading up to the draft, their goal was to add playmakers. They knew they wanted to get a quarterback. They did. They got Drake May from North Carolina. Now they needed to put pieces around him, because that's something they hadn't done for Mac Jones. They came away with 2 wide receivers, 2 good players at wide out. And then to get Jaheim where they did, a guy that can line up at fullback. He can be their starting fullback. He can be kind of a move tight end, slot receiver, running back. I mean, the guy's, an ultimate Swiss Army knife. And the nice thing is he can make plays down the field. I mean, you look at his targets cut up from SFU, and when they let this guy, get down the seam or get down the rail, I mean, there were some big plays down the field of this guy, and he can run after the catch. So For where they took him, I thought it was one of the best value picks in the draft.
Johnny Wilson, and I don't know if you can maybe put your scout cap on for us, Jim, but I don't know if it's being risk averse, but it feels like when there's a receiver that's built to be 6'7", runs in the 4.5s in Indianapolis, like, why not? Why not take a chance before the sixth round? But that's where he goes with the Eagles. How surprised were you to see that be the result for him? And what did you take away from seeing him in person in Mobile?
Yeah, pretty surprised. I mean, think about it this way. I mean, I scouted Kelvin Benjamin coming out of Florida State. I mean, to me, one went in the first round, the other went in the sixth. I mean, there's really, I mean, you could make a debate who the better player was. It's just crazy year to year how some of this stuff falls. But he was one of the most unique guys in this draft, regardless of position, just with that body type, that wingspan, that skill set. I really felt like, you know, Florida State, it's hard to call an offense when you're trying to get all those playmakers involved. It really is. So I'm not taking any shots, but I do feel like there's some untapped ability in the red zone. I was at the Virginia Tech game this year and he had two red zone touchdowns in the first half and then didn't play in the second half. But I think that's going to probably be his immediate role in Philly. And he's unique to, I said, he's unique in this draft. He's unique to that Philly wide receiver room too. So again, I was with Nick Sirianni in Kansas City, great coach. He's going to have a vision for Johnny in Philadelphia, or they wouldn't have picked him. So I'm excited, man. That was a really cool landing spot to me for Johnny Wilson.
Yeah, I mean, A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith, he's got all sorts of guys to help him out with Jalen Hurts flinging the ball. I mean, yep. Is it like a lack of suddenness and twitchiness? Or do they feel like he might not be able to body up guys the way he did in college? It just feels like, and I'm not trying to be a homer here, Jim, it's crazy to see a guy run that well in Indy, be that tall, produce at this level, and then fall behind so many other guys that maybe didn't have the kind of resume that he had.
Well, sometimes it's more than what you see on the tape too. And that's what we don't know on the outside looking in. I mean, these scouts know a lot about these players as people and what goes on behind the scenes than we ever do. So, that being said, I don't know. You never know why guys slide. Maybe it was a medical thing. I have no idea. Now that I'm out of the league, that's not my business anymore. I'm trying to find guys for this game. And again, part of that is trying to bring guys here that helps teams figure out some guys. You know, I mean, Jaheim Bell was a guy that, you know, you got a guy at two different schools. So, you know, that's the interesting thing about the transfer portal now is these guys are transferring two or three times. And back in the day, there would only be one building full of people that knew the player. Now you've got two or three different buildings that know these guys and they all see them differently. And they're, you know, sometimes these guys change going from building to building. So, that's what we don't know, man. It seemed like both of those guys slid a little bit, but we'll see. You know, all they need is an opportunity, and I think both those guys landed in spots where they're going to get a good opportunity.
One guy who certainly climbed might have been the poster child for just how valuable a week in Mobile, Alabama could be is Braden Fisk. He was a guy that the day of the game actually changed sides to even out the roster. I mean, just what kind of selfless worker of a kid was that? And could you pick that up just in hanging out with him a few days and seeing him perform and talking to guys around the game?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think Braden probably helped himself more than any player in this draft in terms of like the bigger school guys. I know this because part of our process is reaching out to NFL teams and having really open dialogue, sharing grades even, you know, on these players before we put our roster together. And when we did those calls back in November, Braden was – every team had him in like the fourth and fifth round. I don't remember talking to any team that had Braden going on day two, let alone 39 overall. So when you get a power five player going from like fourth, fifth round and jumping all the way to the top of two, I mean, that's two, three rounds. That's a massive jump. That's a lot of money. But he certainly earned it, man. He attacked the process. He was incredible in our practices. Extremely hard to block with his get off and his snap anticipation. Really a high-end athlete. I think that was the, kind of the lazy take on Braden as people saw this white defensive tackle and they wanted to pigeonhole him as some like try-hard white guy. And that's certainly not what he is. He goes to the combine. He's the most athletic guy there. So really cool landing spot with he and Jared Verse. You know, Jared's another guy we did a lot of work on. I was hoping we could get here to Mobile. Thought he would have benefited. But he went pretty high too. So happy for Jared. That's just a really cool reunion of those two guys in LA. It should be a lot of fun to watch.
You know, I know Jamie Robinson was out there a few years ago. He ends up going to the Panthers, and then the three guys that were out there this year. Is there a sense in the NFL community about maybe like the caliber of athlete, but also the quality of kid that Mike Norvell seems to be recruiting and developing, and now we'll see hopefully shining in the NFL this coming season?
Yeah, Mike's done an awesome job in the portal, man. He's killed it. He's done. Give him and his staff a lot of credit. They've identified their personnel staff has done a really good job identifying guys like Braden Fisk, you know, at Western Michigan playing in the MAC. And again, he was like kind of a stand up edge player at Western Michigan. They really had to have a vision for what he would be for them. So then credit the coaching staff for, you know, implementing that vision. So it's a whole team process there, but Mike's done an unbelievable job. He and I, you know, got connected when I took this job. He was at Memphis and they were sending some really good players, Tony Pollard, Antonio Gibson. I mean, he was recruiting at a really good level when he was there, and now he's picked it up. And I mean, that roster is stacked. I mean, again, we would have loved to have had Verse in the game this year, and they're going to continue to have guys. I mean, we've already scouted them for next year. There's a bunch of Florida State guys up there for next year. So it's been a good pipeline.
Can you give us some insight into some of the guys that you're thinking about possibly or keeping an eye on this coming season from Florida State's roster?
Well, I haven't watched any of them. There's I just got the total tally. We've got 631 names on the board right now, and I've got a lot of catch up to play because I've been dealing with a lot of stuff on the business end and this draft stuff. So I've got to jump in over the summer. That's kind of what I do in May, June, July, and August, is to get ready for next fall, is try to watch all our guys. We have graded like fifth round or higher. If I can get down in the fourth and fifth round and watch these guys, I feel good about it going into the fall, because that's where we try to stay. We try to stay fourth or fifth round when we do those grade calls, grade sharing calls with the teams. If the league has those guys graded, you know, sixth, seventh round free agents, we try to stay out of that area for the draft. So, but yeah, I certainly got a lot of work ahead of me.
Patrick Payton and Zaire Thomas, but I don't think their grades will be fourth, fifth round. They might be a little higher than that.
Yeah, those names ring a bell. Yeah, Daryl Jackson's actually a guy that we looked at this year. Yeah. Because he was flirting with coming out. So we looked at him this year, and he's certainly a good player. So yeah, we'll be excited to watch all those guys.
All right. We'll let you take some time off before you start diving into all that film. Certainly appreciate you taking some time out, Jim. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Thanks again to Jim, as I think I said at the end of the interview. But you know how it all goes in post-production. You forget what you said and yada, yada. I'm going to stop rambling. All right, that's a wrap for us. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We got two more shows this week. I hope you keep listening. I know you want news. We all want news, but we can't do it because I'm on a boat somewhere, probably sunburnt, probably hungry too, probably a little bit seasick. So maybe I'm not living the dream after all. But thanks for taking time out to listen to the show again. If you could, hit the thumbs up. Go to Corner Pocket, grab some lunch. Go to VitaminEnergy.com, use the promo code WARCHAMPBOGO, and buy one, get one free. Support the folks that make guys like me and Corey make sure that everything's on the up and up before we head on vacation, because they make this thing keep running and rolling. And so do you folks. We love you, everybody. Jeff Cameron Show, I think, 1 to 3 o'clock. I'm going to say that at the end of every show, and I don't even know. Jeff, you can take some time off. I approve of it. He's Corey, and I'm Aslan. Thank you for listening to Wake Up War Champ, presented by the Corner Pocket Bar and Grill.